From Washington, this is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, a suicide bomber attacks a British embassy vehicle in Afghanistan's capital. No election is seen in Thailand until at least 2016. And on this Thanksgiving Day, holiday shoppers prepare to begin their search.
It breaks my heart. It really does to see that this is all, you know, about the money. It's not about the Thanksgiving.
It's all ahead. I'm Sarah Williams. Afghan officials say a suicide bomber rammed an explosives-packed car into a British Army vehicle in Kabul, killing at least five people, including one British citizen. An Interior Ministry statement says the attack wounded 33 others, all of them Afghans. The British Embassy confirmed there were injuries among those in the vehicle, but could not give any other information. The Taliban claimed responsibility for the attack, saying it targeted foreign invading forces and many were killed and wounded. It was the latest in a series of wave of recent attacks to hit the Afghan capital, as a majority of foreign combat forces prepare to leave the war-torn country next month. Two U.S. soldiers were killed in a bomb blast in Kabul earlier this week. Authorities in Thailand, which is under martial law and being run by a retired general, say they do not foresee holding elections next year as originally promised. VOA correspondent Steve Herman reports from Bangkok.
A senior official told reporters Thursday that it is impossible to hold a national election next year because of groups in Thailand who oppose the ruling junta, named the National Council for Peace and Order. Pravit Wongsuwan, a retired commander-in-chief of the Royal Thai Army, who holds the posts of defense minister and deputy prime minister in the junta's cabinet, also said authorities need more time to write a new constitution. Pravit says Thailand will be able to organize elections around the start of 2016, once the constitution is drafted. Previously, coup instigator and now Prime Minister Prayut Chan-o-cha had promised a return to democracy with elections around October of 2015. Sunai Fasuk, the senior researcher on Thailand for the international non-governmental organization Human Rights Watch, says the slipping timeline for polling is not unexpected.
It's not a surprise at all. It's clear that the junta has no commitment to fulfill the promise to restore democratic civilian rule within a year.
The previous constitution was scrapped by then-Army Chief Prayut, and a committee appointed to draft a new one after the general toppled Thailand's civilian government 6 months ago in a bloodless coup. It was the latest in a long series of political interventions by the military over the decades to oust elected or appointed governments. Human Rights Watch earlier this week lamented that Thailand had fallen into an apparently bottomless pit because criticism is systematically prosecuted, political activity is banned, media is censored, and dissidents are tried in military courts. In that current atmosphere, Sunai says it is not possible to conduct a credible election.
Political activity, including activity of political parties, have been banned. There is no assurance that when election happens, it is going to be a free and fair election where everyone can contest freely, can express their campaign freely.
Junta officials have acknowledged that a primary objective of the May 22nd coup is to permanently eradicate the political influence of the Shinawat clan. Political parties allied with the wealthy family have won every national election since 2001, in large part by appealing to the disaffected poor in the rural north. Thaksin Shinawat was ousted as prime minister in a coup in 2006 and is now considered a fugitive in exile. His sister, Yingluck Shinawat, was forced out of the same post shortly before this year's coup. Steve Herman, VOA News, Bangkok.
The 12-nation oil cartel, the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, OPEC, meeting in Vienna today, has decided to keep daily output steady at about 30 million barrels. It took this action despite a 30% drop in prices since June amid an economic slowdown in China, India, and Europe, and the onslaught of North American shale oil. Vandana Hari, Asia editorial director at the global energy information firm Platts, speaking from Singapore, tells VOA's Victor Beatty the cartel has, in the past, tried to provide balance to global oil prices. This time, she says, it declined to cut production and says that is not surprising.
They are, you know, sometimes often suspicious of each other's motives and whether each member adheres to the new limits, the lower limits that are handed out. While we tend to see this as a homogeneous organization with a common principle to keep oil markets balanced, it's important to remember that the production cost, the target oil price that each of the member needs varies greatly. There are members with deeper pockets, with relatively lower production costs like Saudi Arabia, and at the same time there are members like Venezuela, Iran, which have been the traditional price hawks, which need a much higher price. So getting unanimity on a production cut has always been difficult. It's particularly problematic right now because the cartel did away with individual member country quotas starting 2011. So in order for any effective cut to be made now, they would actually need to go back to the drawing board and start handing out member countries' quotas, which at this point of time would be nothing short of a miracle, especially to achieve it in a matter of a day.
Vendetta, what is the future of OPEC 40 years on?
People are actually questioning even OPEC's relevance right now because it does seem like it is giving up that role of balancing supply and demand. Equally, I think it's important to bear in mind that it's in a very different dynamics right now. If you look back to 2008, when the organization managed remarkable cut of 4.2 million barrels per day in the space of a few months and three meetings, while the supply was still more or less in OPEC's hands to balance, right now it's not. And what, to me, it seems to be saying now is that it doesn't want to take on unilaterally the role of balancing when a lot of the oversupply is actually coming out from the tight oil production in the U.S.
Obviously, oil is a cyclical commodity. It goes up and it goes down. How long would the current down price last, do you think?
What is expected to happen with the low prices is, of course, the marginal cost barrels, whether it's conventional oil or whether it's tight oil in the U.S., should start dropping off. The higher cost barrels should start closing down, or rather not coming into the market. At the same time, it will be a little bit difficult given the current economic problems globally, but lower oil prices should also start bringing some of the demand that might have been curbed by over $100 prices, some of that demand back into the market. So these two opposing forces should gradually start lifting oil prices back to what might be a more equilibrium level for the near future.
That's Vandana Hari, Asia Editorial Director at the global energy information firm Platts. She says lower prices reduce the incentive for oil companies to invest in exploration. Should there be a resurgence in demand, those two factors could drive the price of crude up to above $100 a barrel. However, she doesn't see that happening for the next 12 to 18 months. As for Asia, primarily an oil-consuming region rather than a producer, Hari says lower prices provide an environment conducive to economic growth. She says in recent months, lower oil prices have allowed countries like India, Indonesia, and Malaysia to cut costly fuel subsidies, saving them a combined $20 billion annually. The sister of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un has been given a senior post in the ruling Workers' Party of Korea, confirming long-held rumors about her role in government. The Korean Central News Agency today identified Kim Yo-jong as a vice director in the Central Committee of the Workers' Party, the sole governing faction in the communist state. Kim Yo-jong, who is thought to be 26 or 27, has appeared in other state media reports alongside her brother, prompting speculation about her position. But until now, she was never given a title. She is the only other member of the Kim family who is known to have taken a formal leadership position.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's voanews.com. VOANews.com. Online news for a changing world.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. Australian cricketer Phil Hughes, who was struck in the head with a ball during a match this week in Sydney, has died. Team doctor Peter Bruckner said in a statement, the 25-year-old died today, surrounded by his family and friends. Hughes had been put in a medically induced coma and underwent emergency surgery following the Tuesday accident. Bruckner said Hughes never regained consciousness and was not in pain before he passed. Hughes was hit just behind the left ear by a bounced ball while batting for South Australia against New South Wales at the Sydney Cricket Ground. Condolences poured in following the news of his death, including from Australian Prime Minister Tony Abbott. Hughes is the second cricket player in as many years to die after being struck by a ball. 32-year-old South African player Darren Randall died last year after being struck in the side of the head. Well, Americans are marking the annual Thanksgiving Day holiday today with family gatherings, meals, and bargain shopping. Feasts centering on turkeys with an array of traditional sides and desserts are a tradition for the holiday that falls on the fourth Thursday in November. On the eve of the holiday, U.S. President Barack Obama and his family handed out food to clients of a center in Washington that provides food, clothing, and other services to the poor. Earlier in the day, Mr. Obama followed a specifically presidential tradition of pardoning a turkey. The White House ran an online contest in the past week, asking people to vote on which bird should get the pardon. Cheese, or a fellow turkey, Mac. While cheese won the official pardon, both turkeys, each weighing about 23 kilograms, will be spared the chopping block. Well, Thanksgiving is also an opportunity for Americans to reflect on the gifts and blessings in their lives and to express gratitude for them. VOA's Adam Phillips took to the streets to ask some of his fellow New Yorkers what they are grateful for and what they think gratitude is.
At a cafe on Manhattan's Upper West Side, just days before Thanksgiving, a young woman named Sue says she's grateful for New York.
I was in Boston for the last 8 years, and I just moved back this September, and I am loving it, being with my family and meeting new friends, so I'm having a great time in New York. Today, it's 70 degrees, middle of November, and have great coffee. That's great.
Meanwhile, Christopher, a newspaper editor, muses about what gratitude is.
It means to be thankful and to realize that the good that you have in the world doesn't come from you, but it is given to you. Every breath I take is a miracle. I didn't provide it. God gives that to me. And so the fact that I'm alive, I'm grateful for. And if you begin there, you realize that you really have to be grateful for everything that you have. I'm grateful that I live in a country that is not at war here, that there are not bombs going off where I live, that I live in a place that is warm in this cold season, that I have enough to eat. Those are good starts.
Jonah, a Columbia University graduate student, also feels thankful.
Feeling it and expressing it lead to, at least for me, very different reactions on my part. I think it actually, in some sense, takes courage to express real gratitude to somebody. I mean, we say thank you to people all the time, that we're grateful for this and for that, but it almost requires opening yourself up and being a little vulnerable to really express a full, deep gratitude about something.
A young mother named Alexandra feels gratitude for her family and friends.
I guess it's a combination of happiness and peace, being content with what you have, being aware maybe, noticing, thinking about it. You can just be grateful, I think, to no one in particular. To good fortune. I don't know if that counts as someone, but I mean, I certainly don't believe in a god or anything like that. I'm not thanking a god. I'm just thankful for, you know, for a good life. Thankful for the random luck of a good life.
Ben has a more political take on the season. He says he's grateful to anyone that enhances one's possibility for a better life, and that's why he's grateful for President Barack Obama.
It's a wonder to have a person who has a sense of possibility when it comes to politics, and yet is not defined by his determination to manipulate people. It's a very strange capacity to, on the one hand, have capacity to imagine the world, larger than just sort of using people, and yet at the same time understand what you need to do to get things done. I have an African-American son, so that might have some partly to do with it. It's just grace. It makes my kid feel like he's, you know, part of America.
Whether it's because a world figure looks like you or because the apple pie is still warm, gratitude for our many gifts is what makes Thanksgiving a day of the spirit as well as the stomach for Americans worldwide. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
Well, another Thanksgiving tradition is shopping sales in crowded stores at the start of the holiday shopping season. The traditional sanctity of the holiday has come under fire in recent years. Retailers, who used to remain closed, are opening their stores earlier, with many kicking off their holiday sales on Thanksgiving Day. But as Mel Arcega reports, many are not happy about it.
Stuffing and green beans?
Stuffing and green beans had to be the sides.
Never mind the traditional meal of roast turkey with family and friends. For some, Thanksgiving Day will mark the unofficial start to the holiday shopping season. Although some have called it the decline of an American tradition, consumers looking for the best bargains say they can't wait.
I understand both sides of it, but I always want to take advantage of a deal, so I'm going to come out and shop.
It's less amusing for those who have to work during the holiday. Kmart employee Donna Fisher was told she has to work or face the consequences. And she says that's unfair.
There's no choice in it whatsoever. It breaks my heart. It really does to see that this is all, you know, about the money. It's not about the Thanksgiving.
So her daughter Jillian launched an online petition demanding Kmart allow its employees time off on Thanksgiving Day so they can be with their families. Thousands have signed the petition, and the majority of people we spoke with seem to agree.
It's a national holiday. We should all be enjoying it.
Some say it's an opportunity for those who may need the extra cash. But nearly everyone we spoke with say it should be up to the workers to decide.
Well, yeah, they probably could use the extra money, but I think it should be a matter of choice if you want to come in. It should not be a demand for you to come in.
Christmas and Thanksgiving are the busiest travel days for Americans. While retailers insist the early start will make it more convenient for shoppers, others argue the large crowds and the hype are not worth the savings. Unofficially, the Consumer Federation of America's Stephen Brobeck believes the holiday marketing onslaught should begin after Thanksgiving.
I don't know whether most Americans are concerned, but I am personally, in part because I don't feel as if I have an adequate opportunity to count my blessings at Thanksgiving.
Those buying gifts for friends and family are expected to spend more than $600 billion during the holiday season, or about 4% more than they did last year. Kmart is just one of a long list of stores trying to get a bigger share of consumer dollars. Macy's department store plans to open Thanksgiving Day, as will retail giant Walmart. Mel Arcega, VOA News, Washington.
That's a lot of money and a lot of shopping. Well, thank you for joining us today for International Edition. This reminder, you can get the latest breaking news and analysis on global events 24 hours a day on our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington, and please have a very happy Thanksgiving.
This is Today in History. On November 27th, 1095, Pope Urban II launched the First Crusade by appealing for a Christian army to defeat the Turks and take control of Jerusalem. Despite widespread inexperience and poor discipline, the First Crusade defeated Muslim forces and occupied the city in 1099. On this day in 1701, Swedish astronomer Anders Celsius was born. He's best known for devising the Celsius temperature scale. In 1895, Swedish chemist and explosives maker Alfred Nobel signed his last will and testament, setting aside much of his estate to establish the Nobel Prizes that are still awarded annually. In 1921, Alexander Dubček was born. Becoming the first secretary of the Communist Party of Czechoslovakia in 1968, Dubček presided over the so-called Prague Spring, an effort to liberalize the communist regime. The experiment abruptly ended when Warsaw Pact forces occupied the country. Dubček was expelled from the party and sent into internal exile. On this day in 1954, former U.S. State Department employee Alger Hiss was released from prison after serving 44 months for perjury. Hiss was convicted of lying about his complicity in a scheme to pass secret government documents to the Soviet Union. In 1970, Pope Paul VI was attacked at the Manila airport by a Bolivian painter disguised as a priest. On November 27, 1973, U.S. Congressman Gerald Ford was overwhelmingly confirmed by the Senate to be the first vice president elevated to that position under the 25th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. I'm Dave DeForest with VOA's Today in History. Next, an international public service announcement by the United States government.
The United States is committed to supporting efforts by the governments and people of the Arab Peninsula to end the threat posed by Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, or AQAP. As part of that support, we are offering rewards totaling up to $45 million, leading to the locations of the terrorist group's 8 key leaders. AQAP was formed in 2009 by Yemeni and Saudi terrorists under the leadership of Nasir al-Wahishi, who headed a predecessor al-Qaeda group in Yemen. It has conducted many high-profile terrorist attacks against the Yemeni government, U.S., and other foreign interests. In March 2009, an AQAP suicide bomber killed four South Korean tourists and their Yemeni guide. A few months later, AQAP dispatched a suicide bomber who attempted to detonate an explosive device aboard a Northwest Airlines flight over the continental U.S. Other attacks followed. Rewards are offered for Nasir al-Wahishi, AQAP's top leader, responsible for approving AQAP targets, recruiting new members, allocating resources, and directing attacks. In 2013, al-Qaeda leader Ayman al-Zawahiri named him as his deputy. Also, Qasim al-Rimi, a senior AQAP military commander who has played an important role in recruiting AQAP operatives. Ibrahim Hassan Tali al-Hasiri is AQAP's primary bomb maker. He gained notoriety for recruiting his younger brother for a failed suicide bomb attack against Saudi Prince Mohammed bin Nayef in August 2009. Shaki Ali Ahmed al-Badani is an AQAP leader and operative. He played a key role planning a major attack that led the United States to close more than 20 diplomatic posts in the Middle East and Africa in the summer of 2013. Jalal Balaidi is an AQAP regional emir involved in 2013 with planning bomb attacks on various Western diplomatic facilities and personnel. Others being sought are Ibrahim Rubayash, a senior AQAP Sharia official and advisor who provides the justification for the group's attacks, Ibrahim Albana, the group's chief of security, and Othman al-Ghamdi, who has helped raise funds and stockpile weapons. The U.S. guarantees that all credible reports will be investigated and the identity of all informants will be kept confidential. If appropriate, the U.S. is prepared to protect informants by relocating them. If you have information on any of these men, contact the nearest U.S. embassy or consulate. The tip line at www.rewardsforjustice.net or email information to info@rewardsforjustice.net.
That was an international public service announcement by the United States government.